So sometimes when I look around me, I'm amazed at how many tech devices I have in my life. I mean, of course, I have a laptop, I have a telephone, you know, I have a TV, this kind of stuff. But just all around me in my kitchen is a bunch of stuff that my grandparents and their grandparents wouldn't even recognize.
Your grandparents didn't have the George Foreman grill? What do you mean?
That's right, the panini maker. I mean, it's a fundamental element of human society now. How did people live so long without paninis?
Where would we be without paninis?
It's baffling to me. It's baffling. You know, I just feel like so many elements of my life rely on inventions that have appeared fairly recently, which means that my life is completely different from the life of my grandparents and their grandparents.
Yeah. I guess one way to think about it is look around you and think, which technology, if it wasn't there, would make my life totally different.
Yeah, and I think the most important invention might not be something that you notice when you just look around you. It might not be something that throws itself in your face every single day of your life.
It could be something you use every day and not even think about it.
Are you talking about the toilet?
Maybe I'm using it right now.
Please, this podcast, out of the studio and into the toilet.
Hi, I'm Jorge.
And I'm Daniel.
And this is our podcast, The Greatest Invention in the Universe. The podcast
it's called Daniel and Jorge Invent the Universe.
Invent a new title for the podcast on the spot. No, the podcast is called and Jorge Explain the Universe.
In which we take everything in the universe and we explain to you how it was invented or discovered or at least understood in a way that you can possibly understand it and explain it to somebody else. And then you can tell them about the awesome podcast you heard it on.
And maybe using this knowledge, you can go out there and invent new things.
That's right. And give us 1% of all your royalties.
That's right. By listening, you are implicitly signing a contract.
That's right. We need terms and conditions on this podcast, yeah. So welcome to our podcast, everyone. And the topic today is, what is the most important invention in human history?
Yeah, of all the things that have been invented to make life easier, more fun, maybe more violent, what do you think is the one invention that has had the most impact on human civilization or the human condition?
That's right. And you might be tempted to think about something which is very immediate, like, well, I use my phone every day, and so the iPhone is a very impactful invention. But think a little deeper. I mean, think about the thing which, if we didn't have it, would change human history. And so I think that's, I'm tipping my hand here, that's my definition for what's the most important invention, is the invention without which human history would be markedly different. And I love thinking about the way that history could have been different.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about that. When you say what's the most important invention, what do you mean? And so for you, it's about changing history, like the invention that marked the point in time at which humanity could have gone left or right.
Exactly. And some of these inventions, they really come from like moments of inspiration or you know, just accidents. You know, somebody accidentally invents something in the lab. They're trying to make a better peanut butter sandwich, but they actually invent a laser gun or something, right? Mm-hmm. And this kind of thing happens all the time, and it changes the course of human history. And so I wonder sometimes, like, if that person had been sick that day or gotten a car accident or decided to become an artist instead of an engineer, how human history could have been different. And so there are these moments, these pivot points in history where I feel like if things hadn't gotten a certain way, the whole future could have been dramatically different. And inventions are one of those. And so I like to think about if you had deleted one person from history or distracted them in the right moment, things could have been very different.
Yeah, like talk about a butterfly effect. Like if a butterfly had flown in front of Einstein just as he was about to come up with, you know, the idea of relativity or quantum physics, he could have been distracted and not come up with it.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. And there's lots of real examples. You know, for example, Isaac Newton, genius in human history, right? Changed the way we think, invented lots of important stuff, physics, gravity, calculus, all this stuff. His family was sheep herders, right? And the only reason he actually got an education was because his father died and his mother remarried somebody who insisted he go and get an education, maybe just to get young Isaac out of the house, right? And so if Isaac hadn't been sent to school, he never would become this staggering genius in human history.
Yeah, or even more sort of crazy is Supposedly, he came up with the idea of universal gravitation when an apple hit him, right?
I think that's probably 99.99% mythology. But let's go with it. That's true.
But you know, what would have happened if instead of an apple it had been an orange? You know, we could have had a totally different science.
We got the theory of universal juice instead, right? Orange, you glad it was an apple. Who invented the first pun anyway? Somebody's got to get credit for that one.
Yeah.
That definitely changed human history.
I think that is the most important.
And for the worst.
Yeah.
So I'm not an expert in history of technology, and I'm guessing that Jorge, you are not either. And so for this particular topic, we decided to reach out to somebody we know who is an expert who has thought really deeply about these topics.
So this is a good friend of mine. His name is Ryan North. So Ryan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Great. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is Ryan North. I write a webcomic called Dinosaur Comics. I've been doing that for 15 years. And on top of that, I do nonfiction writing. I write The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl for Marvel Comics. And my new book is called How to Invent Everything, A Survival Guide for the Stranded Time Traveler. And it's proceeds from the premise that if you are in the future, you've rented a time machine, you go back in time and your time machine breaks, here's how you fix things. Here's how you rebuild civilization from scratch in any time period in Earth's history. So it's sort of a nonfiction book with a fictional candy coating on the outside, which is the time travel part of it. I get to call it my nonfiction time travel book, which I'm very happy about.
Yeah.
And was it inspired because you met a stranded time traveler and thought, how am I going to help this person?
I have no comment on that.
Are you the time traveler?
Totally a yes.
I always thought of you as a man from the future, Ryan. So is that true? Maybe that's your secret. This is your way of disclosing it to the world.
I don't want to confirm or deny anything. You got to keep some mystery, right? Keep them guessing.
I was really interested in the book because it reminded me of when I was a kid, I was totally enamored by that game, Civilization, which I'm guessing you also played, right?
Yeah.
And in Civilization, for those of you who haven't played, you have to basically reinvent civilization and you have to do it in order. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was the first education where somebody had taken down a lot of humanity's breakthroughs, you know, and said, well, what would you need to reinvent the combustion engine? Well, you need this, and for that, you need this, and for that, you need this, all the way back to numbers and writing and this kind of stuff. So it was really fun to see this sort of detailed breakdown. And what made me think about, like, which are the inventions in human history that most catalyzed technological progress or which most changed the future? So that's what we wanted to sort of focus on in today's podcast episode, is this sort of broader question: what is the most important invention in human history? And before we talk to you about it, since obviously you've thought deeply about this to write your book, we went and asked a bunch of people on the street who hadn't had a chance to think about it at all and asked them what they thought was the most important invention in human history, just from the top of their heads. Here's what they had to say.
Fire.
If I call the wheel an invention, I would say that.
All right. Yeah. Thanks.
Light bulb.
No, the wheel.
The wheel. The concept of evolution.
Is that what you happen to be studying right now?
Yep.
I was surprised how often fire showed up.
Yeah, fire was a popular one. Fire and the wheel, yeah. So that surprised you? How come?
Yeah. And I can see why they went for fire, but I feel like it kind of dodges the question a little bit because it's a pre-human invention, yeah.
Wow. So fire predates humanity.
Like Homo erectus was using fire, and they're not us. I mean, they're humans, they're Homo, but they're not Homo sapiens. They're not.
So wait, we can't claim credit for fire.
We can't claim credit. Homo sapiens did not invent fire. They might have stolen it or reinvented it, but they didn't first invent it. It was Homo erectus.
I think you've just undermined like a core tenet in the belief a lot of people have about their own species. You know,
yeah.
A lot of people went to fire. It's like, this is a defining thing about humanity. This is what makes us who we are. We're
this
proud
is what
of
makes
this.
Us
and
human.
Like,
yeah,
you just DQ'd it from the list. Wow, that's pretty tough, man.
Okay, so we eliminate fire then from the list of important inventions because we didn't invent it.
Yeah.
Oh.
So yeah, so people said fire. They also tend to go for the wheel, right? The wheel's a pretty common one.
Yeah. The wheel's also embarrassing, though.
The wheel is embarrassing? Why is that?
Well, we had the wheel for thousands and thousands of years, but we used it for pottery on the side as a pottery wheel. So it's, again, like if you want for transportation, it took us thousands of years to flip it over on its side. And that's what we think when we think about the wheel. We think about movement, transportation. But we use it to make pottery for a really long time.
No. Is that
right.
True?
Yes. Yes, the wheel for transport comes well after the wheel for pottery.
Nobody thought to put it on the side.
I want to talk about that some more, but first, let's take a quick break. So this is something you come back to a lot in the book, is that you say, we had everything we needed, and if you just knew what to do, you could skip 1,000 years or 100,000 years, you could accomplish something in an afternoon, right?
Yeah.
And I get that. That's like a really fun fantasy to imagine fast-forwarding human progress. But I wonder sometimes how true that is. Like, let's take the question of language, right? Mm-hmm. In your book, you lay down language as like a pretty critical cornerstone of human technology. And I completely agree. But do you think that going back like 50,000 years to skeletally identical humans, that if you went back that you could teach English, for example, to a group of two-year-old, modern humans from 50,000 years ago, and that they would learn it and develop and turn into, English speakers?
I do. And the reason sort of that loophole there is that you said two-year-olds, which is great, because it's very hard, maybe impossible, for humans to learn a language after puberty. It's also really unethical to test, to run experiments on it. But in cases of feral children, people spend their lives trying to teach them to talk, and maybe they learn it a little bit, but they're never communicative. They don't really use it. And so if you're traveling back, 100,000 years, 50,000 years, and you want to start rebuilding civilization, I would recommend don't necessarily chat up the cavemen, the cavewomen, but maybe talk to their kids. Maybe steal some babies if you're going to do it that way.
So you're going on record for baby stealing right here.
I don't want to go on record for fully endorsing baby stealing, but in terms of just pure efficiency of civilization building, directing your efforts towards the cave babies will get you much better results. And there's a huge question mark here, right? Because you mentioned how we have these skeletally identical humans, like anatomically modern humans, so people whose skeletons look like ours. And those show up around 200,000 BCE. And then behaviorally modern humans show up, humans that act like us, that behave like us, that decorate their bodies, bury the dead, that sort of thing, show up around 50,000 BCE. You know, there's this huge gap of what took us so long, what made us finally take that leap from anatomically modern to behaviorally modern. And we don't for sure know, because it's very hard to test. None of these things fossilize or are preserved. But one of the theories I want to go with in the book is it was the invention of language. It was the invention of talking to each other that let us make that leap forward, let us finally become fully human. And so that's the technology I would say is the most important one for us, language, because it allows us to have, not just to talk to each other, but to like have ideas that can survive the death of the host. That's so important.
Absolutely. Language is definitely, definitely important. But the supposition there is that somehow we had the capacity for it, but didn't invent it for 150,000 years, right?
Yeah.
But is it, there are other ways you might imagine it could have gone, right? It could be that most of us didn't have the capacity for it, and then a few brains, mutated, evolved, or whatever, to develop an additional capacity, which allowed for the creation of it. And then, of course, it would be a rapid selection effect. So you can imagine that after the capacity for language evolved, it might have been developed and then spread very rapidly.
Sure, but that requires a change to the brain to sort of evolve in us. And without needing to suppose that, we can just suppose someone invented language. And then the question is, well, why did it take us so long? And language is a really hard thing to invent. Because imagine you have to be sort of this, in my head, I call him Caveman Einstein, who has to not only come up with the idea of language, the idea of expressing thoughts in words, but instantiate that idea, and it's still completely useless unless you're also smart enough to teach someone else how to use it, all within a single lifetime. Like it's not easy to be that first person who's coming up with the technology of language, who's inventing language. And I think you can point to that and say, yeah, that might take a long time to have all those things line up as they would need to be for this to have any practical use.
Right. And I think it touches on this other issue, which is a lot of these foundational inventions, people who are listening might think, what? That's crazy. It's just so obvious. And
oh, yeah.
A lot of these things are so foundational. They've in, you know, they're deeply embedded in the way we think that it's impossible to imagine life without them, which is why, frankly, they're so difficult to invent, right? I mean, because they completely transform the way you think and then become deeply ingrained in your thought process, it's hard to imagine how to get there when you don't have it.
I spent years trying to picture thinking without words. Like, how do you...
Well, I'm talking to two cartoonists here, right? You guys are experts at thinking without words, right?
But we're taking words and putting them into pictures, but it's still, the process seems very, very language-based. Mm. But one of the examples I love touching on that is the idea of, if you have a time machine, you could take one of those children born 50,000 BCE, take them to the modern world, adopt them, raise them as a modern child, and they'll be like any other human on the planet. They'll be as smart and creative and clever and fun and loving as any other human, because they're, you know, standing on the shoulders of giants. They're having 50,000 years worth of technological process for free. They get to have language. They get to learn how to read and write. They get to be in a community. And it seems almost like you're breaking a rule, right? To have this, you know, literal cave person and have them be indistinguishable from a modern person just by changing the environment in which they're raised. But that's what these inventions do for us, right? They change the nature of who and what we are in a way that makes it hard to imagine what it's like without it.
And that's the kind of thing that makes me wonder what's in the future. Like, if there were in the past these sort of trivial but transformational inventions, math, language, etc., are there ones that remain? You know, will in 100,000 years people look back and think, how come Ryan North didn't think of, you know, blah, 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 some transformational but basic way of living and thinking that exploded our capacity for technology and life? I mean, do you think that there are those sort of transformations left?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I believe so. The punchline of this is, you know, we could have made all this stuff and we didn't. And look how blind we were not to see that. How could we have been so stupid? But if there are all these inventions and all these points in history, we can point to that and say, yeah, we didn't see this until later. It stands to reason that there may be that right now. There's probably still some of this, I call it the low-hanging fruit of civilization, that we could invent and aren't. And just aren't seeing yet. And I think that's really optimistic. I don't think that makes us feel stupid. That makes me feel excited. Like, that's, what are we missing that's out there right now? There's still really cool stuff that we can all come up with.
So is that your choice, Ryan, for the most important invention in human history? Language?
Yeah. I think it's foundational. I think it's consequential. I think it's transformational. And also, I'm kind of cheating because it's actually two inventions. I'm rolling reading and writing together into one there. Just calling it language. But
so how do you define language? You mean like the idea of words or just communicating? Because people, I'm sure, communicated with grunts or hand signals, right?
Yeah, but that's not language. So the example I would give is, let's say I draw three pictures. I draw a picture of a cool dog, and a picture of a skateboard, and a picture of a thumbs up. Mm-hmm. And those symbols can be interpreted. You can be like, oh, he's saying a cool dog and a skateboard is good. Or maybe I'm saying, I saw a cool dog and a skateboard, and I gave it a thumbs up because I love cool dogs on skateboards. But there's ambiguity there. And what language is something that works to eliminate ambiguity. So when we're communicating now, because I'm using words with precise meanings. They're not perfect, but they try to be precise so that we can communicate quickly and clear without having to go back and clarify all the time. Mm. And so, yeah, you can communicate with grunts. You can communicate with hugs. You can communicate with longing glances across a dance floor. But for precision communication, you need language. And that's what I'm calling the technology.
So it's kind of like the idea of somebody at some point says, hey, guys, this is crazy. We should have rules that define
what those glances across the dance floors are. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So it's the invention of rules that everyone would agree to communicate ideas.
Yes, with an asterisk. Because one of the craziest proofs I read when I was doing computational linguistics was this person was making the argument that one of the neat things about language that is almost unique is that it evolves so quickly. You look at the way English was spoken 100 years ago, already it sounds ancient. Or at least odd. You go back 2, 3, 4, you go back to Shakespeare 400 years ago, and it's hard to understand, right? So why has it changed so quickly? Why it's based on rules. Rules are what make language work clearly. Why do these rules seem to change so often? That seems like a failure. And the argument this paper was making, which I love, was that the reason language evolves so quickly is because language is really hard to learn, which is true, but actually it's impossible to learn. And we never actually learn the language our parents are speaking. We learn an approximation of it that allows us to communicate. But all the edges are fuzzy. And so since we have all these places where we don't actually know what the rule is, that allows language to change so quickly and to evolve generationally so fast, which I love. I love the idea that, you know, language is not just hard, it's impossible. And you will never learn the language your parents are speaking. Just can't be done.
Well, it's certainly true that parents just don't understand. So maybe that's the reason.
That's right. I forgot you're a computational linguist, right? That was your education.
Yeah, I did a master's in computational linguistics. Yeah.
So that's a bit suspicious that a computational linguist thinks language is the greatest invention ever. You know,
yeah, like, exactly.
Like me saying cartoons are the most important invention ever.
It's only a tiny bit self-centered. Also, it's a bit of a dark view because it suggests that the greatest accomplishment in human history is thousands of years ago, and we haven't really done anything since which matches up.
But we're still using it, right? Like, it's allowed us to do everything else. So that's why I say it's so foundational, is that it is what unlocks everything. Because you can be the smartest person in the world without language. You're trapped in your own head and you're having these amazing world-changing thoughts and can't communicate them in a way that's clear. You're not going to communicate, you know, relativity through grunts and glances. You need language for that. You need mathematics for that.
So I think it's fascinating what you're saying, because I was going to make exactly the same argument to make a different point. I was going to use the same argument to suggest that math and science were the most important inventions in human history, but for exactly the same reasons.
And this is from a scientist. I feel like you guys are maybe a little biased in your selections here.
I feel like until we had mathematics, all we had was language, which is frankly kind of clumsy when you want to communicate very clearly and precisely. And I remember learning math and learning logic and feeling like, finally, here we have effectively a language for very clearly and precisely communicating ideas which are too fuzzy in English to communicate clearly.
But is mathematical language just another language? Do you know what I mean? Like, is that a sub-invention of language?
In the book, I cheat because I'm saying now language is the most important invention. The book, I actually give five. I say written language, spoken language, scientific method, calorie surplus. So again, having extra food so you can worry about other things and where your next meal is coming from. And the last one I call non-sucky numbers, which is basically a number system that permits mathematics to happen in a productive way. So one of the reasons the ancient Romans didn't get that far with math is that they had these Roman numerals, which are just incredibly clumsy to operate with. You have to do math before you even know what number you're looking at. So I'm not going to sit here and argue that math isn't important, because I have it on paper. I think it is important. But I will say, and this is maybe dodgy, but I personally, Ryan North, think that mathematics, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like mathematics can be a creative expression in the same way that language can, only with more rules. Is that wrong? Is that romanticizing it? Or am I incorrect?
The romanticization of mathematics. Wow. I'm not sure it's possible to romanticize math. No, I think that's fair. But I would also make a similar argument, you know, for science, like in terms of helping us develop technologies or helping us understand the world or communicating clearly with each other what we know and what we don't know. It's always amazing to me that it took so long for people to come up with a scientific method, you know, or even to come up with the idea of empiricism. Like, you have an idea, let's actually check if it works before we accept it in the canon of ideas, right?
Yeah.
You know, one of my favorite examples when I teach introductory physics is the comparison between Aristotelian physics and Galilean physics. You know, like Aristotle thousands of years ago said, oh, things just move because it's in the way of things to move. And Galileo was like, let's check. And turns out in an afternoon, he disproved all of Aristotle, right? And there's an example of somebody actually making huge progress in an afternoon based on a single simple idea. Mm-hmm. But why did it take thousands of years before people realized, wow, science is actually only useful when you compare it to what's actually happening in the real world? But, you know, once you have that idea, of course, then you have this enormous flowering of technology and advancement. So it seems to me like, yeah, language is important, math is important, but in some sense, science is a really strong contender for the most important, because we've had it the shortest amount of time, but it's led to perhaps the greatest transformations in, you know, the way we live.
Well, here's an interesting question. So you, Ryan, think language is the greatest invention ever. And Danny, you think math and science are the greatest inventions ever. Do you think that we're done? Like, can you foresee a possibility that there's an invention in our future that could maybe overtake these two things to be the greatest invention ever?
So one of the reasons my book is structured the way it is, where it has this invention of time machines, and then you go back and you're doing time tourism and you get trapped in the past, is that I feel like if you invented time travel, then you're done. That's the last invention that ever needs to be invented, because any problem you encounter, you go to the future, see how they solved it, bring the solution back with you. The second you invent time travel, you've invented all other inventions it's possible for humans to invent.
Boom, which proves that time travel is impossible.
Ooh. Or it proves that that would surpass language and science in my estimation. All other inventions en masse beats everything else for sure.
What do you think, Daniel?
I think that for that to work, you'd have to invent time travel, which would violate causality, which is what you need in order to be able to steal inventions from the future that haven't been made yet, which is basically just science fiction. And we already invented that. So that's what I think about that.
Wow.
What do you think, Daniel, would be, what do you think could be something we might invent in the future that could totally revolutionize things even more?
That's impossible to comprehend. Like if I knew that, then I would invent it, right? All of these inventions, the transformational ones that, and I love the way Ryan pointed this out in his book, all these inventions, if you just knew what the invention was, then you have invented it, right? It's like having the password, right? All you need to know is the password and the door is open. Some of these inventions, like, you know, steel, even if you went back and told somebody how to smelt steel, it's not like they could do that afternoon. They have to build a whole industrial base, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But these really transformational ones, it's just knowing the idea is the invention. So, Jorge, it's not like I have the next human transformational invention already in my head and just haven't shared it with anybody. And I was waiting for this podcast to reveal it. But if I did, I would totally roll it out right now.
Can you imagine?
Let's take a quick break.
I also wonder, like, if you could go back in time and you're talking to a 50,000-year-old dude and you're, like, excited to share with them the ideas you have and the technology that you can use to transform his and her world. I wonder if they might think, you know what? We're good. Like, you know, I got my roving mammals I can eat. You know,
yeah.
I hunter, I gather, I, you know, carve sticks every once in a while. We bang rocks together around the campfire. Life's not bad, you know?
Yeah, that's it. That's the thing that we kind of forget is that in times of plenty, the hunting and gathering lifestyle is a fabulous lifestyle. It's like you're lazing around. It doesn't take all day to hunt and gather. You have lots of free time. Just chill out. Do whatever you want. Food's plenty. Who would give that up? Farming sucks. Farming is back-breaking labor in a field. Like it's a lot of work. But what it gets you is reliable food so that when the times of plenty run out for hunting and gathering, you don't starve and suffer catastrophic population collapse because you have resources. You're in one place. You can build infrastructure. You can start building buildings that you don't have to pick up and carry with you. Like it's where civilization begins when you stop moving around every time things get hard. So yeah, I can see if you arrive in a time where it's very easy to find food, it's going to be hard to convince people to join the farm and work for you or work with you. But one of the arguments for that I found was someone was pointing out that it's very hard to produce alcohol in a hunting and gathering lifestyle because you're moving all the time. And so if you want to have a beer, you need a civilization for that. And that might be one of the things that induces people to come and help out on the farm.
Yeah, my other fear for time traveling, Ryan, is that you go back in time with all these crazy ideas, you're just going to get branded a witch and killed. Like, you know, there's a sort of a social barrier to convincing people to join your let's transform humanity movement. But you're right. Maybe beer is the answer to that problem. All right. I only have one more question for you, which is sort of a multiverse question.
Sure.
To me, the history of human invention seems sort of chaotic. You know, with somebody had this idea, somebody had that idea, sort of came together here and there. Have you thought about sort of the 1,000 parallel universes where you run the human experiment? And how many of them do you think we would end up after this amount of time at roughly the same place? Like, do we always end up stumbling into the same things in roughly the same order? Or are there these moments when human technology could have shifted dramatically and gone down a different path and become, done things more rapidly? Do you think those 1,000 different parallel universes have similarities or are they all totally different?
I think they have similarities, but I think they're markedly different. Like, when you have these huge expanse of time, which we could have met something and didn't, all you need is that one person to invent it. You remove Isaac Newton from our history And we have a very different history of thought, of mathematics, right?
Perhaps, but you know, maybe Leibniz would have invented everything Isaac Newton didn't think of, right? There could have just been like, it could have been an idea of the time that somebody was going to invent because the pieces were there.
And that does show up. You look at the invention of radio, and there are a bunch of people independently coming with radio at about the same time because the pieces were in place. There are certainly moments where sort of things are in the air and everyone's moving towards this one invention, and radio's an example of that. But there's other examples where it didn't have to be that way. The stethoscope's a fun one. That's the first stethoscope was just a rolled up tube of paper to isolate and listen to a sound. And we had paper since 300 BCE. It was invented in 1816 CE by a male heterosexual doctor who had a busty female patient and didn't want to press his ear into her chest because that was too erotic an experience for him. So he rolled up a tube of paper to leave some room for Jesus and listened through that and accidentally discovered that this isolates and clarifies the sound. So that's one of the few examples I could find where someone actually progressed science by being too horny to do their job properly. And that guy could have shown up at any point in history, right? Like that's.
And also it proves that that boobs are useful for something.
All right, Ryan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Ryan, for entertaining all of our amateurish thoughts on a topic in which you are an expert.
Thank you. I think they're great questions. I love talking about this stuff. I wrote a book about it. I love talking about it so much. It's called How to Invent Everything, A Survival Guide for the Stranded Time Traveler. And you can get it at howtoinventeverything.com.
Well, I think that Ryan, who has a history of studying language, thinks that language is the most important thing invented in human history. And me as a scientist, I think math and science is the most important thing invented in human history.
Yeah, I find that a little suspicious. Like, you guys have all these great reasons why your team should win.
That's right. And, you know, there's a trend there because when I was asking people on the street what they thought the greatest invention in human history was, most of them talked about what they happen to have been reading, you know? So student studying evolution said evolution. A student studying the atomic theory said atomic theory. A student on a scooter said the wheel. I think it's just a hard question to answer because it's so broad. And so people freeze up a little bit and then they think about it from their perspective. And there's a lesson there, you know, that we all see the world from our own perspective.
Well, you know, it sort of happened to me too when I was asked this question, when I had to think about it, I just kind of looked around me, you know, like I didn't think internally through the history of human civilization. I just kind of looked around me and I thought, try to think.
Banana.
Like, what would be...
You thought banana. I could not live without bananas.
Yeah. It's what makes everything else possible. Come on. It's what got monkeys out of the trees, if you think about it. Right. Or onto trees.
Up into the trees, exactly.
But yeah, you sort of have that instinct to look around you and to try to gauge impact that way. Like, what all around me would not be here without, if it hadn't been invented?
That's right. And I think the lessons there is that we can all see only a tiny bit of the fabric of human history, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's very difficult to say anything general because human history is this incredible mosaic of billions of people's experiences. And all we can do is speak for ourselves. I mean, I know historians try their best to weave these broader stories about what has happened in humanity, but I always feel like so much of actual human experience is just brushed under the rug when they try to do that. And so I think none of us can really speak for all of humanity. We can only speak for ourselves. What is the most important invention that has affected your life? I think that's really the question of the podcast.
Or, you know, maybe it points to the idea that the more you know about something, the more fascinating it becomes. Do you know what I mean? Like, Ryan has studied linguistics for a long time, and so he just knows so much about it and how it's connected to everything. So from his point of view, it's like the most important thing. It's the hub of all things. And like, you've studied science and physics for a long time, and so you've seen how it's kind of sort of connected to everything else and how it's nothing would be possible without it. And so you see it as the most fascinating, most important thing. And so maybe it's just all sort of connected to itself. And it's just that the more you know about something, the more you think it's crucial to the structure of human history.
So why didn't you argue for comics to be the most important invention in human history since you spent 20 years studying it, right? I totally agree that things, as you study them, anything can become interesting. You can find a puzzle anywhere, right?
Like, you could go into a deep dive about like a cup, you know? Like, if humans hadn't invented the cup, what would happen?
There'd be a lot more injuries in baseball. Oh, wait, no, you're talking about a different kind of cup. Sorry.
But you know, do you know what I mean? Like, you could go in a deep dive on anything and see how it's all connected to the greatest moments in history and civilization, right? Like, without a cup or any kind of vessel to hold water, maybe we wouldn't, you know, been able to, you know, leave the watering hole and start building, villages and things like that.
All right, so maybe we should leave that as a challenge to our listeners. Choose some trivial item in human life and challenge us to spend an entire podcast drilling down and discovering what's fascinating about toenail clippers or Glad Wrap or whatever it is in your life. Send it to us at feedback@danielandjorge.com.
Or write us as at jockstrap@danielandjorge.com.
That's right. And thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe. If you enjoyed it, tune in next time or check out our book called We Have No Idea, An Illustrated Guide to the Unknown Universe.
See you next time.
Thanks for listening. If you still have a question after listening to all these explanations, please drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Daniel and Jorge, that's one word, or email us at feedback@danielandjorge.com.